Campus FM presents My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Produced and presented by Patricia Salomone.
In the long, quiet evenings before the advent of television, my father listened to the BBC News and my mother played Chopin on our piano. Her music drifted out through the open windows into the dark summer nights, lit up only here and there by the dim lights in the British military barracks opposite our home.
Once more, during the unsteady bicycle ride in the cornfield, I made a tear in my homemade knee-length jeans. Another memory of that day at San Vito is a wasp sting. The nasty creature had crept under my T-shirt and stung me on my back. The kind old Signora De Donato scrubbed my skin with a clove of garlic, which was supposed to cure the irritation. Of course, the smell stuck to me, and my irritation at that was worse than the uncomfortable feeling on my back. My mother said that it was a natural remedy for the wasp sting. I thought it was horrid. She thought it was horrid that I had again torn my jeans. All in all, it was not too much of a successful day, was it, down at San Vito? Yet I remember it as a turning point in my childhood.
Penso che un sogno così non ritorni mai più. Mi dipingevo le mani e la faccia di blu. Poi d'improvviso venivo dal vento rapito e incominciavo a volare nel cielo infinito.
Back home in Malta, she had sewn these jeans as well as many beautiful dresses for us. In fact, the preparation for the holiday, with its element of anticipation, was great fun. We had to make time for it because we used to travel soon after our school exams, and school exams were no joke. We had little time for the preparation. Still, I remember, we used to take the bus to Zabar, usually on a Thursday, which was our weekly off day at school. In Zabar, there was a shop which sold fabric by weight, and therefore very cheap. It was up to her, then, to turn those cuttings into beautiful and elegant clothes for herself and into pretty frocks for her two bimbe. I particularly remember one cotton dress with pin tucks all along the bodies, which then opened into a gathered skirt, because I was wearing this dress when one afternoon I slipped as I walked down the stairs in Via Cavour. I fell, the whole flight of steps sitting on my bottom, with this wide skirt puffing up as a balloon around me as I went down step by step.
Una musica dolce suonava soltanto per me.
I was so ashamed and bashful when I landed at the bottom amongst a group of young men who sojourned in the hallway of the Mastronuzzi Palazzo, that I did not feel the pain in my badly bruised bum, and walked away embarrassed, as though nothing had happened.
Ma tutti I sogni nell'alba svaniscon perché, quando tramonta la luna li porta con sé. Ma io continuo a sognare negli occhi tuoi belli, che sono blu come un cielo trapunto di stelle.
Once we arrived in Taranto, she would dress us up like two little princesses. She would wear her most alluring, and off we went to Villa Peripato, where she would buy us ice cream in cones and rent bicycles for us to ride on the rotunda. We were particularly thrilled when our Nonna Tekla could free herself from her duties as a doctor's wife, as a nursing daughter, as an ever-busy nonna, to come along with us. Then we would hear her whisper to our mother's ears words we were not supposed to hear, while they looked up sideways at the barred windows of the prison overlooking the public gardens. The whispered name was Malandrini, and somehow the matter was related to Antonietta.
Felice di stare qua giù, nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù.
How we loved going up to Antonietta's room. It was a long, narrow room, an attic reached by a flight of wooden stairs. Up there, Antonietta spent the middle hours of the afternoon, the only respite in her long working day. Up there she had a bedroom, a big bed with a shiny bed cover, and on it a doll with a large frilly frock. She had a radio and photos of a man with cheeky eyes and black moustache, Malandrini.
She would sing at the top of her voice, and her songs were always love songs, always sad.
Vaga distratta mente abbandonata, l'occhio sotto cappiella nasconduta.
She would lure us to her room to give us sugar-coated almonds that she called confetti, and she laughed when we called them by their Maltese name, Perlini. Above Antonietta's room, on the roof, Nonna's pigeons cooed, and in her room the radio transmitted Claudio Villa's Stornelli Romani and Maestro Angiolini's orchestral tunes. While Claudio Villa sang Luna Rossa, Malandrini's cheeky eyes looked down at us from the framed photo hanging on the wall. But most astonishing was Antonietta's toilet, which to our complete surprise was out on the balcony. Hours and hours of our holiday were spent up there in the hot hours of the early afternoon, listening to Antonietta's stories or playing with her doll with the frilly frock, while she went through her chores, singing away her sad songs, before duty called her back down to the big apartment for her afternoon and evening duties. Invariably, these began with serving espresso coffee in the little cup and saucer on the little metal tray to the padrone di casa, il dottor Mastronuzzi, before he sat in his surgery, his ambulatorio, to receive his patients after his afternoon nap. After serving dinner, Antonietta would sit for hours before the big kitchen fireplace, feeding it with piles of newspapers and the endless amount of medical leaflets that Carlo Erba Pharmaceuticals sent to the dottore. Over the fire stood a great brass cauldron, containing bedsheets being boiled whitest of white in the bubbly soapy water. It was thrilling and bizarre to us children, and we begged for the privilege of placing the papers into the incandescent furnace ourselves.
Luna rossa se ne ghiota, la casera senza me vedere.
On the morrow, we would climb up the old staircase to the roof,
to help hang up the enormous white sheets and run around as the women got on with the task.
We climbed those stairs with some apprehension. The walls were hung with old baskets and tools. Unused chests contained old clothes and implements. There was a hole leading to the chimney, through which, we were told, La Befana came every year on the 6th of January.
But we were never there in winter, so we could not tell whether this was the truth or whether it was a tale. But, of course, it was exciting to accept the tale as being the absolute truth. There, in the attic, below the roof, Eulalia had her kittens. We knew about them, but kept the secret because we knew that, if Antonietta were to notice, she would have taken the poor kittens away. So we hid those live toys and fed Eulalia while she nursed her babies amongst the old baskets and empty barrels up in the attic. Then, what a sense of freedom we had once the roof door was opened and we could run out onto the roof.
Che bella cosa, la giornata sole, l'aria serena.
Oh, that was a very special roof. No normal roof, of course. Every room in the apartment was domed. So the roof itself was another thrill, as it was made up of a series of little hills. Can you imagine the excitement of us little girls, often joined by our cousins, as we ran up and down from the hill that was the kitchen to the next that was Nonna Angelina's bedroom, and the next the dining room, and Anna Lilina's bedroom, and the corner room, Nonni's, and then the sitting room, and the study, and finally the room in fondo... Endless laughter rang in the air as our patient Nonna watched over us and fed her chickens and her pigeons, who lived in the room on the roof above Antonietta's. What a home!
Downstairs, at ground level, on the Via Cavour corner with Via Anfiteatro, was Martino's Pizzeria. The delicious aroma of his pizzas glided up to the kitchen balcony, which was always wide open. It invaded the dining room, whose big window, too, was always wide open, to let in the fresh evening air. The aroma entered our nostrils, set our taste buds watering, and our voices nagging.
Rarely, very rarely, when the family women had not prepared dinner, did the order go downstairs to Martino, for the garzone, to bring up pizzas and birra d'rere. What a treat, those piping hot pizzas, just out of the wood-fired oven, with the fresh mozzarella steaming, the bright red tomatoes and the hot dripping olive oil, fresh from the olive trees of the Tavoliere delle Puglie. Never anywhere in the world have I again tasted any better, and to this day, when I smell a wood-fired oven, olive oil and melted mozzarella, my senses are alerted. But it is only a pale, poor copy of the original.
Stein from the ate, Stein from the ate.
At my grandfather's table in Taranto, red wine, the red wine from the Tavoliere delle Puglie, flowed like water, and we children were encouraged to take just a little. This too was thrilling to us, for we were allowed to join the older people and to partake of their lives. So, at times, we heard and saw
what would best have been kept away from us children. Here, too, was an adult who had a particular laugh, very much like Mrs. Galia's back in Malta. It was Cousin Mimina. Together with the cousins, we pretended to be asleep, but we waited for her to come on her late-night visit, just to hear her shrill laugh. We crept out of our beds and stood behind the dining-room door until, at her first explosion of laughter, we burst out giggling and had all the adults chasing us back to bed because it was too late for children to be up. At 10 o'clock every evening, the big cannon blasted a shot from the naval shipyard. It was the signal for all sailors to return to their ships. It was also an excuse for us to get out of bed. Barefoot, we ran to the balconies to watch the military band as it marched down the main street, gathering more and more young sailors in their sparkling white uniforms. Music was loud as it passed beneath our balconies, but it grew fainter and fainter until, marching behind the band, the sailors disappeared in the direction of the naval dockyard, far at the end of the road. Another parade, a different sound from the one back home, which came from Tinia Barracks. Would I have things to talk about when I got back home to quiz? Across the road on the pavement opposite the entrance to Via Anfiteatro was the imposing brick building, the Palazzo del Governo. It seemed, indeed it is, an enormous building in pure stile ventennio. My great-grandfather Luigi Bianculli would never have dreamt, when early in the 20th century he built his palazzina in Via Cavour, angolo con Via Anfiteatro, facing the dreamy Golfo di Taranto, that the man with a square jaw would have had this enormous building built opposite his little kingdom to hide away the splendid view. To me, that palazzo was very important. It was there that in 1944 my young father was stationed at the British headquarters. From the roof of Via Cavour 52, pretty blonde Anna looked up to his office window. I would not be here to tell, had not that enormous building been opposite her home, and they would never have met. During my childhood in the 50s, this red brick building with its marble finishings seemed a fairy tale castle. It had enormous windows and, at street level, big circular decorative spaces into which rarely, only rarely, I managed to scramble together with Rosa's sons for childhood games. At the far end, on the Lungomare corner, stood three tall palm trees, and beyond them the beautiful Golfo, which lit up at sunset with an unforgettable red glow, framing the silhouette of the two sister islands of San Pietro and San Paolo. My relationship with the sea grew and deepened on the island of San Pietro. Each morning, we would hurry to the quay to catch the 10 o'clock gis, the ferry which took us to the virgin beaches on the island. For a day or two, we would be le Maltesi, the foreigners, but soon we joined in and became as one with the kids during the crossing and for the rest of the holiday. As we leaned out of the ferry's rails, we saw playful dolphins following in its wake, we saw the enormous medusae, large as dinner plates, and brown in colour. The ferry boat flanked the Giardini delle Cozze, with the patient fishermen leaning out on their boats, tending the big bunches of mussels, which grew on poles, like large, mythical bunches of black grapes. The ladies chatted and knitted to while away the time. Kids chased each other around the decks or played cards, until 20 minutes later we had crossed the gulf to the small military island where we would spend the best part of our holiday swimming, fishing for cockles, and starting the first games of life. Time seemed to pass so slowly during those hot summer months in Taranto. My sister and I were young and carefree, happy to be taken to swim at San Pietro in the morning, to run up to Antonietta's room in the afternoon, and in the evening to be taken to the public gardens for a bicycle ride and an ice cream, or to the Lungomare for a long walk. Hand in hand with our nonna, we visited a family friend who offered us iced tea, which she had learned to serve when she lived in Addis Ababa with her husband during Italy's colonial days. Then we would go to meet our grandfather at his club, where he bought us our first packets of Charms Alemannia or a Motta ice cream on a stick. We were thrilled when we were taken to the naval officers' mess next to Villa Peripato to watch an open-air film. This form of entertainment was very popular in Italy in the 50s and 60s, when the trend first was for neorealism and commedia all'italiana, with films by Vittorio De Sica and stars like Anna Magnani, Totò and Peppino De Filippo, Vittorio Gassman, Sofia and La Lollo. All the young women in the streets dressed and combed their hair like these stars, dreaming to be like them, a diva. It took little to make them feel like a diva. Large plastic looped earrings, white skirts, new look style, stiff padded bras, ballerina shoes, and Italian pink lipstick, Brigitte Bardot style. But I was still a child, clumsy and happy-go-lucky, enjoying every minute of my carefree holiday that never seemed to end.
Non ti fidare d'un bacio a mezzanotte, se c'è la luna non ti fidare, perché la luna a mezzanotte riesce sempre a farti innamorare. Non ti fidare di stelle galeotte, che invitano a volersi amare. Mezzanotte per amar, mezzanotte per sognare fantastica.
But time did go inexorably by, and glorious as they may be, holidays do not last forever, do they? The vacanza italiana, with its gelato di caffè con panna, its piping hot pizza, its granita di limone, its ride on the ferry to San Pietro, its glorious rides in the park on our bicycles, its excursions to the Baroque village of Martina Franca, its multitude of characters, its music, the tastes and the sounds, inevitably came to an end. And time has gone by fast today also, so we shall have to wait for next week to continue our story. To hear more about My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Until then, goodbye.
Non ti fidare d'un bacio a mezzanotte, se c'è la luna non ti fidare, perché la luna a mezzanotte riesce sempre a farti innamorare. Non ti fidare di stelle galeotte che invitano a volersi amare. Mezzanotte per amare, mezzanotte per sognare fantastica.
Ma come farò senza più amare? Ma come farò senza baciare? Ma come farò a non farmi tentare? Luna, luna, tu non mi guardare, luna, luna, tu non curiosare, luna, luna, tu non parla sentinella. Ogni stella in ciel parla al mio cuore, ogni stella in ciel parla d'amore, ogni stella in ciel sarà la mia stella. Mezzanotte per amare, mezzanotte per sognar fantastica.
Non ti fidare senza bacio a mezzanotte,
senza baciare,
se c'è la luna non ti fidare, perché la luna
non mi guardare,
mezzanotte,
luna tu non curiosare,
riesci sempre a farla sentirella. Non ti fidare di stelle galeotte,
ogni stelle c'è, parla d'amore, ogni stelle c'è sarà la mia stella. Mezzanotte per amare, mezzanotte per sognare fantastico.